Good day and welcome to the Business Success Network podcast. I'm Stacey Calder, founder of the Business Success Network and magazine, and we help you to grow you and grow your business. We want to get you as visible as possible online, offline, and through events such as networking, awards, and conferences. If you're sitting here and listening to this and thinking this is a great show, we are looking for guests to be part of it. We want to hear your story and we want to share your information with the public. We want you to be as visible as possible. So join us over at the Business Success Network UK on Facebook, join the community, get the support, become a cheerleader for other small businesses, and we'll see you very soon. Hi, so we are back for part two of our mini series with Rachel Bennett from HR Fusion and myself here, Stacey Calder from the Business Success Network and Magazine. And today we are on the podcast. So thank you for listening or joining us on YouTube. I am so excited to be back. I loved the first part, Rachel. And I just, you know, we said we were only going to talk for about 20 minutes and it was a little bit longer. But that's okay, because it just showed how much we wanted to kind of dig into your background and what this, what the book's about. And I think it's just been fascinating to hear how your own personal story has got you to this point of becoming an author. And in part two, we're going to look at the first part of your book. We're going to look at this, you know, this term shadow cultures that you've kind of, well, you've captivated me with it. And, you know, people have listened to the first one, they're back for the second. So we're going to look at exploring those shadow cultures now. So really my first question to you then, because we talked a bit in the first one about company culture, and I think that's probably a phrase that most people will have heard of, especially if, you know, they're working in a team and they're part of a company. There's a lot of talk about the culture within. So let's start by looking at the company culture then. Tell me about it in general. What is it? Why is it important? How does it affect, you know, their everyday working careers?
Yeah, absolutely. Before I do that, you don't know I'm going to do this. So I have a little cheeky surprise. Between our first podcast and our second podcast, look what arrived in the post. A copy. So I'm so excited. So this is my test copy with all the gubbins inside. I don't know if you can see any of this, but it's all here. So I've got my very first test copy.
Hold it up. Hold that spine up. Look at how much content is in that. No. This is not a little...
Absolutely.
I love a proper book.
So sorry for keeping you in, but I wanted you to be surprised. But I literally, between the two podcasts, I've been in tears because it came and I was like, me and my husband opened it and I was like, oh my life, it's real. I've got a book. No. I've got an actual book. So yeah, sorry.
I love that. I love the fact that I was being all, I'd got my podcast voice on. I was going with the flow. I was like, right, let's get the intro, let's get the first question out.
You were brilliant.
Mic drop moment there. No, I love it. I absolutely love it. That's it. We've gone off topic now. I'm going to do something. No. Can I just say, though, what a gorgeous designed book. I love the fact that it's black and white. I think that's really going to stand out.
Absolutely.
Hold it right up, folks. You saw it here first.
Absolutely. So that's
how does it make you feel? Well, here's our exclusive now. How does it make you feel when you look at that cover and your name is on the top of that book?
Do you know what? Given the conversation we had in the first podcast around my story and my journey and my kind of lack of confidence and writing and all that sort of stuff, when I was told this test copy was in the post, I felt sick because I kept thinking, it's not going to be good enough. I'm not going to like it. What have I done? I'm telling all these people about this book and will it be worth it, etc. And when it came, and I've actually done a little video of me opening it, so that'll hit social media at some point when I'm brave enough. But I genuinely, oh my life, it literally brought me to tears because I was like, my life, I've got a book and I'm an author and it's going to be out.
Hold it up again. Now, I know if you're not watching this on YouTube and you're watching it and you're listening to it on Spotify, you won't see it, but I'm so over the moon. I'm taking a photo just to prove that we were the first, the exclusive here on the Business Network.
Absolutely. So I am super, super proud of myself. I literally have just had a quick skimmy read through a few because it's a test. So I've got to read it to make sure that that I'm happy with everything. And then it will go off to print, etc. And I literally have been reading bits going, gosh, did I say that? That's quite good, isn't it?
Obviously, we'll revert back to my proper first question in a minute. I am going to ask you another question now because I've got friends that have published, and I've, like I said, I've worked with some clients before that have published, and you know, just holding that book, and do you know what? I'm so happy for you. I can't even remember what I was going to say. It's gone.
Holding the book.
Gone from professional interviewer to I have no idea what I was going to say.
It's all good. I can take over for you. It's all good. I'm an HR person. It's all good. But no, I think going from having so long of wanting to write a book and then going through the whole process and going through all the emotions and all of that, physically holding the book, I keep wanting to stroke it because it's in a mat as well. So it's a.
What does it smell like?
I can't smell. I've got long COVID, I think.
My question to you was going to be, obviously, you've wrote the book, you've rewrote it, you've changed it, you've wrote it again, you've read it, you've edited it, you've reread it, you've now got the copy in front of you, you've got to do the final read of it.
Yeah.
Are you bored of it yet?
No.
Oh, I love it, because I often speak to writers and they say, oh my God, by this point, we're so sick of the sight of it.
Yeah, I got to the point of seeing it on a computer and I've got to the point of I'm sick and tired of this now. I'm sick, but physically getting it, it's like I know this sounds really stupid now, but it's like I literally just fell in love with the whole topic all over again because it's a book. It's come out of my brain through my fingers with the help of an amazing group of people, and it's turned into a book. And now my book is here, and you know, hopefully it will help people to start addressing this shadow.
It won't be long till you've got more and you're signing them. They laugh at me because whenever I meet someone and they give me a book, I'm like, have you signed it? Or they'll say, oh, you can order it off Amazon. And I'm like, not with your signature, I can't. So we've got to get a Rachel Bennett, we've got to get an exclusive signature on there so that it can go on my BSN shelf of signed
books. There you are, you see. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, that's fine.
Side swap 7 minutes. The podcast.
That's 7 minutes.
The question you asked was about what is company culture and why is it important? I think that's what the question was.
But you know what? The good thing about our company culture here is that we just go with the flow.
So, lovely segue there.
So that was it. So moving on to the actual discussion of the day, I could just sit here all day with your book just dancing around, but we won't. For the people that are listening to this podcast rather than watching it, let's get back to those the company culture then, because there will be people listening to this that are thinking, like we said in the first one, actually, it's okay, we've got a great company culture, and there will be those thinking maybe not.
And you know what? I think company culture is an individual thing as well, because some people will fit a certain culture and some won't. So you could literally have two people working in the same office with the same manager, same environment, and one hates the culture and one loves the culture. So, you know, it's a really individual thing as well. But for me, it's an interesting one. As part of the research, I looked into different types of cultures. I hear lots of people say, oh, we've got a well-being culture, or we've got a high-performance culture, or we've got a digital-first culture, or customer-first culture. Honestly, the list goes on. And when I did a bit of research, the figure that came out was 176 recorded company cultures that are quoted. And there's an interesting one. There's probably more. And I don't know where that figure particularly kind of came from or how it was made up, as it were. But it just shows that there's a lot of company cultures out there. And I felt that the word culture is bandied around a lot. Mm. And I've read many a strategies that you read the strategy and it will say, oh, we're going to have a learning and development culture, and that means this. And then we're going to have a customer first culture, and then we're going to have a recruitment culture, et cetera, et cetera. And so for me, I was intrigued by all of these different cultures and how do you have all of these different cultures? So the more I digged into it, what people, I believe, are trying to say is they want a high performance culture. And there's lots of subcultures that belong within that high performance. So most companies want their organization to be the best it can possibly be. And therefore, they have other cultures within that culture to make that. So, you know, if they are a customer first culture and the customer is at the forefront, they want to be high performing because they want to serve the customer to the best. So for me, culture is very much about the values of an organization and the behaviors of that organization and how sometimes it's very intangible. So you can go into, I don't know, into a supermarket. You could go into two different supermarkets. You can go into a really high-end supermarket versus a more run-of-the-mill supermarket. Mm. And as a customer, you feel different. You have a different experience. And that's because they've got slightly different cultures, because they've got a different demographic. And that's absolutely fine. So for me, culture is a really complex thing. There's some fantastic authors and kind of thought leaders in the industry, and we can learn from all of them. And for me, all I'm trying to do here is kind of shine a light on culture and the importance of culture in our companies. And like I say, you know, how many times have we, you know, heard or done it ourselves where we've joined an organization and we thought, oh gosh, this is not what I thought. And that's because it's because of that underlying culture when you get there. And like I say, sometimes it's good for one person and not good for another.
That's really interesting because, you know, everyone is a different personality types. And I see, you know, I see a lot of companies that they will do these personality tests and they will, you know, they're looking to recruit certain skills. But often actually I've found sometimes it's not necessarily recruiting the skills that is what they need. It's almost recruiting the parts of a personality of a team that's missing.
It is.
So it might be that they're looking for somebody with empathy because there's not a lot of it in the office or something like that. Do you find that's often the case, or do you think you almost need one set of people that work in a similar way to have a, or do you need a balance?
I think you're high performing, your top talent are the people that have got the experience or qualifications, knowledge, skills, all of that kind of skill set to do a fantastic job, but they also have the desired behaviours, attitude, and all those things. So the perfect person is to recruit both of those, you know, and I would argue our current recruitment processes in a lot of companies are not fit for purpose. Mm. Quite a lot of the time I see adverts that are out there that sell the company as this amazing company that's the best thing since sliced bread. You've got to come and work here. And as a candidate, you go, oh my life, that's brilliant, got to work there. You go through the recruitment process. First of all, they do an interview. Let's face it, are we really going to see the real person in an interview? So there's a conversation to
be had. It definitely works two ways in an interview, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You can get into an interview on a CV, and I've had it before where I've seen people walk in and you think, that's not what you said on your CV.
Yeah,
but similarly, they could walk into an organisation and think, this is not what...
Absolutely. And as you go through that process, you know, even if you've got a brilliantly slick, excellent process, you get through to the end, you offer the person the job, and then they start on day one, and like, oh gosh, this company doesn't represent the recruitment journey that got me here. Because the recruitment journey could be fantastic, you know, state of the art. But then when they get into the company, actually the company is in problems and maybe they've got, you know, bullying going on in the company or whatever it might be. And so for me, it is about companies being open and honest about who they are and then recruiting the right people to be able to help sort it out. And that's kind of where this shadow concept comes from, because a lot of companies, and it's not all companies, it's some fantastic companies, and sometimes it's only a group of people within a company, etc. But quite often what I've seen is you go into companies and they've got values on the wall and they've got fantastic strategies and they've got, you know, everywhere's decorated beautifully and they've got this fantastic office environment and, you know, they pay loads of holiday pay and I don't know, all the things that you could wish for that are quite a tangible thing. But then their values say things like, I don't know, it's a safe environment to, you know, make mistakes, for example. So there could be an implied word that says that you can make mistakes. But then the minute you make a mistake, you're hauled into the boss's office and told off. That's the shadow that I'm talking about, is this, you know, let's do what we say on the tin. If you're saying that you trust somebody to go away and do a project, even if it makes a mistake, well, then you need to trust that person. And quite often it becomes quite hard. And then the command and control comes in because that trust gets lost and different things.
So, and this is far deeper than, you know, we've talked about you being a HR director, you know, on boards. This culture, the way that you come across in an organization, like you said, the fact that, you know, there'll be some ethoses where this is a company where you're allowed to make mistakes and you learn from them.
Yeah.
Comes much deeper than, I wasn't saying than HR, but yeah, it's a real people part of the business, isn't it? It is. Isn't it just this is what's on the wall, we're going to follow it, but then we're not going to follow it. You know, there's a real, it's a real, like what you said, shadow. It's an underlying issue that isn't just, oh, well, actually, you've made a mistake. We're now going to ring HR or whatever it is. So,
absolutely. And I think for me, the important thing to remember in all of this is I don't think people do this on purpose. I don't think at all. I think, you know, if somebody has made a mistake, for example, 9 times out of 10, their line manager, for example, is picking them up on it. And they're doing the best they can. So some of this is really complicated and it's really hard to sort of get underneath the skin of, because I generally believe most people go to work to do a good job. Mm. I don't believe people get up in the morning and go, right, I'm going in and I'm going to do the worst job I can today. I think people generally want to go in and do a good job and be told thank you. But I do think there's things like, for example, lack of communication. And we hear it all the time. You know, you do a survey of some description and it always comes up, oh, we need more communication. And I'm not sure we do. I think it's more we need better communication. Mm. And what happens is, I don't know, somebody hears a rumour mill or somebody starts something and says, oh, I've heard our budgets are being cut by 10%. Then somebody else says, oh, that means the company's, you know, not doing so well. And all of a sudden, a rumour mill has started that everybody's going to be made redundant and the company's going to close. And actually, that's not the case at all. Maybe they're cutting 10% because they're going to be investing in a new venture that's going to create more jobs. And so it's that sort of stuff, that's that kind of shadow that's in the middle there, that's starting to perpetuate. And it didn't need to, because actually it's just people got the wrong end of the stick. And so if organisations kind of look into doing a deep dive into whether there is shadows in their organisation or not, and then how to address those, then that high performance company is going to be a lot more achievable.
Brilliant. It's just fascinating, isn't it? Because when you, like I said this in the first part, when you think about culture, you automatically, now I've been self-employed for 15 years, but you do, it takes you back to all the places that you've worked and you start thinking, well, what was the culture there and what was that like? And you do, you start thinking of, like you talked about a customer-centric one, you've talked about being a performance culture. Is there a culture that you've come across more than most? Do you think there's a, you know, is there one that people kind of are drawn to or that gets talked about more than maybe one that maybe someone hasn't heard of? If you want to give an example of that.
Yeah, so there's loads. I think the most popular one has definitely got to be high performance culture. That's without a doubt, that's what most companies are after. And most employees understand straight away what that means. It means being high performing. The other popular ones, around learning and development, so kind of that lifelong learning culture, so we're encouraging everybody to learn and grow, etc. Toxic culture does get a bit of press, and for me, I struggled with the toxic culture side of things, because for me, labeling something as a toxic culture is in my head is really negative. And I was kind of, you know, putting everybody in an organization in the same pot. And I don't believe that everybody is toxic. I think there are toxic parts of cultures. And that's kind of where this shadow comes in, because you can have, you know, the high performance culture, for example, that starts turning into a toxic culture, because the high performance culture goes into the shadow. And the darker the shadow and the more into the shadow it goes, then it starts becoming this toxic culture. And we've seen that on the TV with recent things. Like a few months ago, there was a whole scandal around London Met and a lot of the cultural issues around how females were treated, particularly for as an example. Now, to me, that's some of that's going to be toxicity, but some of that's going to be that shadow. So the shadow is almost that warning sign that something's happening, something's getting worse, and that shadow is getting darker. So for me, you can address the shadow a lot quicker and a lot easier than you can when it gets to that kind of toxicity, as it were. But yeah, I think people mention culture all the time. They just don't necessarily mention the word culture. So you'll go into somebody somewhere and they'll say, oh, absolutely, we always put the customer first. Therefore, they've probably got a customer first culture or ethos or a way of working. And a lot of those higher performing cultures will then make sure that all their policies and procedures and everything else are all aligned to that particular way of working. And so all I'm saying is just be aware of this kind of shadow that sits there. And sometimes it's just one person. Sometimes, you know, we've all been
Like I said, I've heard it quite often. Oh, you know, you mentioned the word toxic, and actually that was a brilliant. I was sat here and I was looking at notes and things, and you know, you talked previously about we just mentioned inclusive. We mentioned agile before we went live. You know, we hear a lot about the CSR responsibilities, especially with charities and things like that. But toxic is a word that is often bandied about. It gets thrown about a lot. Yeah. It's a toxic office. It's a toxic culture. And like you just said, it only takes one or two. Bad apples, let's say, for it to turn not very nice. And actually, if a leader or a management or a board or a set of trustees or whoever doesn't know how to stop those couple of toxic people,
absolutely,
then it spreads, right?
Absolutely. And this is where, you know, these shadows are formed in all sorts of different things. Sometimes they are formed because of a process. You know, we talked about recruitment process. So you could have inadvertently created the best process in the world for recruitment, but actually you're managing people's expectations at a different level to what the organization is. So some of those things are quite easy fix. You know, I've been in HR a long time, and I have seen people that perhaps don't fit, and I've struggled to say they would be toxic because I don't think they are toxic. I have seen these people when they're at the vulnerable and they're going through, you know, disciplinaries or being dismissed, etc. And there's nothing toxic about most of them. A lot of the time they've lost their way, or they don't fit somewhere, or something somewhere has not quite worked out. And so, you know, for me, it's about that awareness then for us to be able to kind of go in and talk to people about, you know, how they're feeling and how they've got into where they are. And we all have this kind of invisible map of the world where we've all got to where we are today by our own personal journey. And those things do come into the workplace. So some
I don't think anybody ever sets out to go to work and create havoc, do they? I would hope not. You don't apply for a job and think, right, today I'm going in and I'm going to be the toxic one, and you know,
absolutely. And that's why through the book and this part of it, there is things like in there about management styles, because I think different management styles help us to manage different people in different ways. And so for me, I really struggled at the beginning of writing this book around this word toxic culture, because for me, it's a really negative way of addressing something that is not great. So for me, it was really kind of going, okay, so where does this fit? And this shadow kind of goes to me, actually, it could be just in the shadow. It could be just something where you're noticing, for example, two departments that just don't get on, and there's a project that you really need them to do, but it's never going to work because the two departments are just not getting on. So you've got your high performance culture kind of ethos, and that's great, and people are all living it. But then in the shadow, these two departments are just not talking to each other. And so that's the sort of stuff I'm talking about. And then that is about kind of management style, how you approach things, you know, how you get them together, how you address kind of the elephant in the room and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about the company culture there. We've kind of touched on the toxic culture. So we've done a lot of positive, done a lot of negative, but also, you know, you have kind of coined this shadow culture now. And like you said there, it's almost like you don't want to talk about toxic because it does sound negative. So yeah. tell us in more detail then, what is a shadow culture? How do you see that?
Yeah. So a shadow culture for me is, it's a really difficult one to explain sometimes, because sometimes you have to feel it. So sometimes you just, you know, if you ever, I don't know, go in a library and straight away you're shushed and told to be quiet because everybody's reading in the library, you get that cultural environment quite quick, don't you? Whereas if you go to, I don't know, ABBA, I went to an ABBA concert a couple of weeks ago and it was brilliant and it was just electric and everybody was laughing and joking. And again, you get that feeling. So for me, a shadow culture is a feeling, and sometimes it is a feeling of, this just doesn't feel right. This is sitting wrong with me. You know, she or he is giving me a look. I don't really like the look they're giving me. I don't understand that look, you know. Sometimes it's a power dynamic. So you could have two people that are trying to do one over on each other. Then you could have, again, we've talked about communication. So it could be that there's loads of brilliant communication going out, but actually there's too much because you can't see the communication. There's the whispers. There's the kind of coffee shop, you know. I remember years and years ago, which is a great example, years and years ago, I worked in an office environment, and it was a very old-fashioned office environment where the men had the offices and us women sat in a bigger room outside the offices. And this chap who was our manager, every now and again would come out, open the door and call one of us in. And he would do it in a way that we'd be like, oh gosh, are we in trouble or are we not in trouble? And then he would sit in the office and talk to us and then almost make out like it was all a secret and we weren't to tell other people. And so when you went into the office, you were petrified. When you came out of the office, you felt really important because you knew stuff other people didn't know. But then what happened is everybody else in the office was like, what does she know? What does she know that I don't know?
Or what's she been told off about, or what's really going on? And then the rumour mill starts.
Absolutely. And because you're told not to tell anybody what's happening, as you say, the rumour mill starts. And that's where this kind of shadow comes in. It also is in mistrust. So, you know, we said about values. If you've got a value that's about trust, but then you openly hear people telling not quite the truth, let's say, then straight away, you're okay, I'm not sure if I trust them because they said, I don't know, that employee was the best thing since sliced bread to their face. But actually now they're telling everybody that employee is not that great. What are they saying about me? Do I now trust that person? And that again starts breeding this kind of this, what I'm calling this shadow. So they're kind of some of the examples. And I've kind of seen it happen, or I've spoken to people where things have happened as an example. One person told me that they were in a one-to-one with their manager, and the company values were written on the wall right behind where the manager was sitting. And the manager was talking directly against the values that were sitting behind that particular manager. And that person was sitting there kind of going, okay, I think I'm in the wrong place because I signed into this company because of X, Y, and Z. So I think for me, it's very much around, again, it's around that honesty of organizations to meet themselves where they're at and help managers to manage people, but then people themselves, employees themselves, understand if you fit or if you don't. If you don't fit in the company, don't take it out on the company, find another job. Do you know what I mean? So it is kind of that harsh reality that it's not, in my opinion, it's not down to the exec to make this organization the best organization possible. It's not down to the managers. It's not down to the employees. It's down to everybody. Everybody plays their part. And if you as a person, I speak to many people that will say to me, oh, it's Monday morning, hate my job, don't want to be there. I'm kind of like, why? Go get another job.
And you know what? I think this is a real self-employed thing now. I'll be really honest. I've had this conversation loads of times. I've fallen out with people. And actually, I think some of my friends probably hate me when I get on my soapbox, because they are, most of them, you know, it takes a special kind of person to go self-employed, and they're still in. And there is that, what I would call the employee mindset, you know.
Yeah.
My
yeah.
husband was an employee for a long time. So was I. We're both yeah. now self-employed. But for a long time, I used to say to him, you're looking at this like an employee.
Yeah.
And actually, if you don't like getting up on Monday mornings, find a job that doesn't, you don't have to get up on Monday mornings,
yeah,
or go and run a business where you can change your timetable.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you don't like, you know, if you don't like the fact that you're only getting a certain percentage into your pension pot, okay, go and find something where, you know, line it up. So people get really frustrated with me, because I'm always like, do you know what? Go out and do what makes you happy. I'm a big believer in that. Yeah. And I, you know, there is a saying, isn't there, that people don't leave jobs, they leave managers and things like that.
Absolutely.
And I agree with that to an extent.
Yeah.
But if you're not happy in something, in an environment or in a job, I am a big believer of, look, you will find something and you
absolutely
will be happy.
Absolutely. And for me, this is all about that kind of, what I'm trying to do is eke out that conversation, because I don't think, you know, it's not a line manager's job to make an employee happy, in my opinion. And it's not an employee's job to make a line manager happy. You control your own happiness. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's really difficult for lots of people to change their job and have the confidence, or, you know, they may sit and say, well, I haven't got the skill set, etc. And this is where companies can go in and do programs to help people, you know, be their best self. And so there's a lot of this in this kind of shadow world around, you know, helping people leave organizations. But there's also a lot about helping managers be the best managers they can be. So I'm not picking on any particular kind of facet of an organization. What I'm saying is that sometimes when different variables come together, sometimes they create a shadow. And so therefore, for me, it is about that self-awareness to say, actually, we've got all the great intentions in the world, and this is how we're going to do it. But let's have some self-awareness that we've got some of these kind of variables that kind of sit there. And I have been been in teams of some brilliant projects with brilliant people. And so when this works, and when you have an eye on the shadow, you can get brilliant results. And, you know, celebrating successes and saying thank you to people and all of those great things. So the shadow is there to help people understand that realm sits there. And I think we all know it does, but I'm just trying to bring it to the forefront and then kind of focus on, you know, all the fantastic things that people are doing. But let's help us all be in the right place.
So that's brilliant. We talked a bit there about the rumour mill, you know, you call it the rumour mill. I call it the quick, let's go to the coffee machine. And while we're making coffee, we're having a bit of a gossip. Or, you know, you mentioned that there was an example where the men would be in the office, the women would be outside, and they're coming in and out. And actually, when you're told don't say anything, the chances are you're straight over to that coffee machine going, oh, I was told this, but don't say anything. And then they say, oh, yeah, and it goes round. So it's kind of this whole roundabout thing, and then the trust doesn't come in. Either, you know, like I just said, we've talked about this rumour mill. I'm guessing sometimes there's quite a resistance to change as well. Can you give us some examples of some of these other shadow cultures? Anything that you've really found?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the resistance to change part first, though, is an interesting one. And I think change is a really interesting one. We know, we've just been through COVID, haven't we? We know what change is like, and that was like a huge change. And it's changed the working environment for a lot of people massively. But we've all adapted. So I think change is something that companies that are progressive and good companies, they have on their radar and they know how to do change management. And actually, I think in a lot of companies, change management is probably has the potential of having the biggest shadow. But I think a lot of people, particularly HR professionals, are already on the case. And so, you know, it's an interesting one. But as far as kind of those underlined cultures, and we've touched on a few of them already around the kind of like gossip, you know, a bit of a gossip culture. Sometimes shadow cultures are probably the best way of explaining them is they're like an unofficial culture. They're almost like this underground culture that nobody really talks about, but everybody knows is there.
It's like Fight Club. First rule of Fight Club is we don't talk about Fight Club.
Yeah.
We're covering all the topics today.
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the things there is going to be around, you know, being overworked. That's probably kind of one of the biggest kind of shadow cultures that would sit there.
Do you know what? While we're talking about this, I've got these visions of, you know, the offices, the, you know, the small businesses, the larger corporates. Mm-hmm. But actually this one, the overwork culture, this really fits in with small businesses as well, because there is such a culture and I see it all the time. And it makes me feel a little bit sick in my mouth. And it is overwork thing where, you know, if you want to be successful, you've got to be up at 4 a.m. and in the gym at 5 a.m. and then you work until 8 p.m. And everything I train or coach or mentor is the complete opposite.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this overwork thing, you know, if you're not on the edge of burnout, you're not going to be successful.
Absolutely.
That, as you've just said that, then I'm like, yes.
It is. I was in London a few years ago and I was talking to a chap and we were talking about culture and he turned to me and he said one of the biggest issues at the moment for him was this, what he called a busyness culture. And I was like, you know, yeah, I get it. And a lot of it is sometimes people are busy and they're creating this burnout culture. So that's a whole other one that we've talked about a lot in the press and everything. But this kind of busyness culture is very much when somebody says, oh, I need something doing. And the reply straight away is, oh, I'm really busy. And people feel like they have to justify their busyness.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for me, what I'm trying to do with organizations, and I know loads of other HR professionals are doing the same, is to start helping organizations look at, rather than time spent on things, look at outcomes. So, you know, particularly with working from home, trying to drop the whole 9 to 5, but turn to somebody and say, I need a report and I need it by Friday. And then leave them alone. You don't need to know whether it takes them 10 hours or 20 hours. As long as you get the report and it's the value that you wanted for the wage that you're paying that person, it doesn't matter to me how much time they take to do it. So these, when
I talk, when, what time of the day? Because we all work at different, we all have a system and we all work at better times of the day. You know, there is some, for some people after lunch is a complete slump. So, you know, what is the point in sitting in an office if actually you're sitting there and you're nodding off or you do it, you know?
Absolutely. So
if they want to do that at 10 o'clock at night, and I've had people say to me, why the heck are you working at 9? Yeah. And I'm like, actually, this is a really good time for me. Absolutely. I'm alive, I'm awake. Yeah.
And this is what I think for me is around that manager and employee relationship. You know, if you've got a really great relationship and if you can, as a manager, really build that relationship with whoever's reporting into you, and as an employee, you know to have that honesty and that trust, etc., that relationship can then have none of this shadow stuff in it. And so if, for example, you turn around and say, oh, I don't know, I'm not feeling so well, I'm going to knock off at 3 o'clock, your manager should be, you know, it's fine. As long as you get the, you know, can you still get the work done by Friday? Yes, I can. Brilliant. That's fine. Crack on. And to me, you get a lot more from people if you are like that. Whereas I think you go back years, the managers sometimes would do that, but then the employees were told they wasn't allowed to. And I think we need to kind of look at, like I've said earlier, I don't think one size fits all. I think, you know, it's not just the company, not just the leaders, not just the employees. It's all of this coming together to ultimately decide what the organization's purpose is. So why is the organization in existence in the first place? Who is it you're there to serve? And then from that, design that culture. But that culture needs to go into everything. And if you've got certain things you want your managers to do, then your employees should be doing it too. And we need a lot more openness in companies, a lot more trust. You know, if there are issues with budgets, for example, well, don't just tell the managers, you know, talk to everybody, say to everybody, this is the situation we're in, and hold it. And for me, that diminishes the shadow. And for me, my own personal experience is over the last 20 odd years of being in business, I have seen what I am referring to as this shadow in many guises and many forms. And if you kind of have it part of your psyche when you sit with people, you can almost find it, which is why it's quite hard to describe, because you can find it and you can feel it, and you can kind of go, okay, I can see that manager and that employee look like they're having a great relationship and they look like, you know, they're best buddies and stuff, but actually somebody's going off and gossiping over here, so is that really the case, etc. And so a lot of it is around kind of emotional intelligence of all of us putting that forward.
Fantastic. So obviously we're talking about shadow cultures because that's the theme of the book. The book that you've now got in your hand, oh, it's so exciting. What are the main takeaways that you intended the readers to gain from that first half of the book? And we're going to talk about the second half, which is the model in the next one. But, you know, looking at the shadow cultures, we've talked so much about this now. I'm so into it. The more that you talk, the more I think, oh, yeah, there's that as well. So that people are already going to be reading this going, you know, yes, experience that. Oh, never thought of that. That's a good one. How do you hope that your knowledge and the first part of the book then will influence the way people work or the cultures that they work within?
So, for me, it's dead simple. Or the reason I have done this book is because I want to help myself and others be our best selves. And it is as simple as that. I am not saying this book is the only way to do it. And I'm not saying that, you know, it's the best way. Or I am saying that this is something I've come across. This is something I've come across that I believe deeply. If we all have a bit more self-awareness about what I'm calling this shadow culture and we act upon it, we will all, employees, leaders, companies, the whole lot of us, be happier and more productive. So I think from, you know, the two-pronged side, what I want people to do is to go away, take it away, even if they just take away the concept. Don't buy the book or don't do anything else, but they take away the concept, and every now and again they think, gosh, I wonder if that's a shadow, then I've done my job in some respects. So what I'm after is people taking away this as a concept, and my hope for the book and the concept, etc., is that it will help people be happier at work, and ultimately it will help organisations become high performing or have a chance of becoming high performing. So yeah, I'm not asking much of a book, am I?
I love it. You don't even have to buy the book. Look, if you're listening to this podcast, I think it's pretty easy to see that this book will cover a lot. You know, okay, it's all about shadow cultures, but the fact that we've, you know, we are 42 minutes into a podcast here.
Again,
I know. It's us too. We talk too much. But we have covered so much. We've looked at company cultures. We've looked at what the shadow cultures are. You know, I genuinely think people will be reading your book going, you know, light bulb moments, because whether they are part of a team and they're thinking, actually, this is why I feel like this, or whether they are part of management and leadership and they don't want those shadows, or they want to identify them quickly, because that's, I'm guessing that's a big thing. You know, we've talked about HR before. HR is very reactive, and yet, and I know I've said to you, surely if management and leaders were more proactive, these reactive things would stop, or they wouldn't take as long or be as big a problem. So that's where I see your book, is that it will get people thinking in their environments and how they can improve.
And my point, just to make a point that's clear for me, is I don't think it's HR's responsibility to change the culture of an organisation at all. I think HR are there to impart any wisdom or skill set or anything else. This book is about upskilling all of us so that we can all own our own behavior and how we react and how we own. So if, you know, like we said, if you don't like a job, do something about it. So this book is about empowerment of individuals, but it has been written, I am a HR professional, so it's been written from my viewpoint of how organisations work. One of the things that we haven't covered, which we won't cover in the podcast, is if you do get the book, there's a little cheeky chapter in there about becoming a shadow hunter. So I'll leave that one a little bit hanging.
We're going to dangle that for the next podcast, or are we just going to dangle that they've got to go buy the book?
Yeah, I think go for the book. Yeah.
I love it. Come on. Right. So, folks, that is the end of podcast number 2 in this mini series with Rachel Bennett. I want to find out how I can be a shadow hunter. I'm sure you guys do. Please do get in touch with us. Drop your comments in the comments and go out and check out Rachel. More on that later as to where you can find her. Thank you, Rachel. It's been...
Thank you very much.
Go on, give us one more look of your book.
There you go. Still there. You go.
So if you're watching on YouTube, you will see the excitement on our faces. If you are listening to this on any other podcasting site, you need to go and find Rachel. You need to go and have a look at her book, and you need to come and join us in the Business Success Network UK Facebook group, because that's where it's all going to happen. Rachel's doing a big book launch. It's going to be in there. There's going to be lots of talk around culture and shadows coming over the next, well, let's say 2024. Why not?
Indeed.
It's all happening. Rachel, thank you so much for your time today. I feel like I've learnt loads.
You are very welcome, and thank you very much for having me. It's really lovely to talk it through and to hear it starting to become, you know, real out there in the book form, etc. So yeah, thank you.
It certainly is, and thank you for surprising me with that key piece of information, which is, look, I've got the book. Letting me go off on a tangent and then dropping it in there. Right then, folks. As I said, this is the end of part 2. Please do join us for part 3, where we're going to look at Rachel's 6-step model to culture change.
Thank you.
So, you've been listening to the Business Success Network podcast. I hope you have enjoyed this episode. Please do go and check out all the other episodes that we offer. We've got a great range of guests that have gone before us and that are coming up. And if you want to get involved in the Business Success Network, you can find us at www.businesssuccessnetwork.co.uk. There's loads of ways you can get involved, whether that's from contributing to our business magazine or whether that's getting involved in the podcast. We are here to showcase your expertise and help you to grow you and grow your business.